San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good morning. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB, you could hear us on any device as this show airs. We are free on iTunes if you search the title of the show, and all these podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner, best-selling author, philanthropist, and a family office expert advising several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Good evening. How are you, Richard?
Happy to be back from Hawaii.
That's right. You were gone.
So it was a great trip. Spent a few nights in Kona, then over to, which is on the Big Island, Hawaii, then went over to Oahu for a couple because Mary's moving one of her tennis tournaments over to Honolulu the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh, my gosh.
She got a great deal from the Hawaii Tourism Board.
How about that?
But more on that later. And then back to Kona for a couple of nights before we headed on home. We had 1 hour of rain in 7 days.
How about that?
So that was great.
I thought it rained like every afternoon on one of those islands somewhere.
Not where we were.
Okay, well, good for you. Good for you. Anyway, welcome back. We labored. I had 10 guests in here while you were laying on the beach last week.
So. That's good. Yeah, you needed my microphone, put
few,
it that way.
Yeah, a few were on the phone too. But today, only two guests. So, and we'll get to them, both VIPs running for office here in San Diego. And we'll get to them in a bit. But I just want to make one correction. We had Mike Slater on, who's the daytime host here.
Yes, we did.
I did say that Marlboro was marketing a marijuana cigarette, and I looked that up online, and it was a hoax, so I want to just correct that. I thought they were, the packaging looked really pretty good, but I think it was from Marlboro Menthols, and they were passing it off as somebody had doctored up the label. But anyway, that's not true yet, but I wouldn't be surprised down the road. And maybe we can talk to one of our guests about his opinion on that too, the legalization. Matter, we're going to do a show about that.
Yeah, it's legal in Hawaii.
Yeah, is it really?
Yeah.
Did you see, like, go out to lunch and people on patios just puffing away, or what?
People sitting on, well, you know, you have no smoking in hotels and so on.
I mean, on outside, though.
Yeah, no, you see people, yeah, absolutely.
How about that? Well, maybe you don't have to buy it. You just have to inhale.
I've never tried. I don't know.
But anyway, got a big election coming up in a couple of weeks.
It's only 2 weeks away.
Yeah, so I don't want to digress too much because in studio we have one of the illustrious candidates for city attorney, and I think there are five of them all together, but we have Gil Cabrera, and welcome to the show, Gil.
Thanks for having me. Good evening.
Our pleasure. So, look, we like to start with the bio on our guests, and born and raised and educated, and then how you find your way to San Diego, et cetera. And I know you've got a long history here, so go.
On your mark, get set.
I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. Born in New York, raised in Huntington Beach, California. Went to Cal State Fullerton for undergrad, and then Boston College for law school.
There you go.
Was recruited out here to one of the largest and oldest firms in the city,
which was
Luce Forward, Hamilton and Scripps.
Of course,
I heard of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're not around anymore, sadly. But
really?
They've been absorbed by the largest law firm in the world.
Are they McKenna Long now?
No, they were McKenna. Now they're Denton's.
That's right. Now they're Denton's.
Yeah, so now it's one of the largest law firms in the world.
Still pumping lawyers into judicial seats, though, right?
That's the hope. It's still one of the best firms, best thought of firms. And then after 3 years there, I was recruited to one of the larger national firms, Cooley Godward, up in the Bay Area.
What kind of legal work did you do there, though?
At the beginning of my career, I did some real estate litigation and employment litigation. And then as my career progressed, I did much more sort of complex, large, ugly business fights. When I was at Cooley, I worked on some of the largest pieces of litigation in the country, billions of dollars at issue. I had a case that went up to the California and the U.S. Supreme Court, actually.
Hmm. Interesting.
And then the last 8 years, I started my own practice, so smaller firm. Where I ran the business and then helped small and mid-sized businesses here in San Diego. A lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of folks that started their own companies.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also served in a lot of city commissions and things. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. Over that time period, I did what I could to volunteer. My parents immigrated here in the 60s from Cuba, and so they started over, lived the American dream, and just always...
You've got some Asian and Cuban.
I do. Yeah, my mom is half Cuban, half Chinese, so I'm a bit of a mutt. But they always just reminded me how amazing it was that we were able to come here and start over and live the American dream and to always give back. So I tried to do that whenever I could.
So did she leave Cuba when Castro came
right
in?
Right after, about 2 years after Castro.
How about that?
Have you been able to go back?
I have not. So my parents have gone back once, and through miscommunications, they scheduled that trip in the middle of my second year law school finals, so I didn't get to go. But so my family's been back, but I haven't yet been wanting to go. But hopefully in the next year or two.
Okay, but tell us about your public service, Lou.
Sure. So I first worked with some nonprofits, Make-A-Wish Foundation, was on their board of directors and on their national board of directors. And then I did a task force that reviewed the police department's use of force procedures. I chaired that back in the early aughts. And then I was on the Ethics Commission for 5 years, chaired it for two. And then most recently, I was appointed to the Convention Center Board of Directors in 2013. And I currently serve in the Executive Committee and chair of the Budget Committee.
And the family, what? How many children?
Two little girls, 6 and 8, and my wife of now 10 years, who is also a lawyer in town.
How about that? And then you were also on the LGBT commission or something?
Yeah, currently I serve on the LGBT Community Center Board of Directors.
Outstanding. All right, so.
Why the interest in the city attorney's office?
You know, a lot of it stems from the fact that I owe so much to the city. I mean, I started my career here, met my wife here, our kids were born here. I love our city, I think, like most San Diegans do. And I also happen to really enjoy the practice of law and think I'm particularly good at it. And so it's one of those offices that allows me to serve the public but do what I love doing, which is practicing law. And I think most San Diegans kind of understand how important it is that the mayor and the city council actually get good legal advice. We seem to fall by the wayside a lot on that front in our town.
Talking about history?
Yeah, a little bit. We tend to get sued a lot in this town.
Exactly.
I don't know if you guys have picked up on that.
So we've noticed.
So the primary function of the city attorney is to provide legal advice to the mayor and the city and defend them in lawsuits. Like if someone slips and falls on a city sidewalk?
Correct. So the primary purpose of the city attorney's office is as the chief legal officer of the city. You are the lawyer for the mayor, the council, all city officials on any advice they need. They have to go to you unless there's some sort of conflict. You also are the representative of the city in any lawsuit the city brings or any lawsuit the city is sued in. And then there's also a criminal division within the city attorney's office that does misdemeanor crimes within the city boundaries, which are often, you know, the ones that really affect quality of life, vandalism. We do a lot of, obviously, domestic violence. Cases that are important and don't rise to the level of felonies, which are handled by the DA.
Now, is there much? We were talking about you have a spot running on domestic violence. Is that the exclusive domain of the city attorney, or can the DA get involved in that too? That's the county. Do you guys ever collaborate on things, or is there crossover? Or
they do collaborate. Depending on the level of the incident, is where it goes, and how many times the person's been prosecuted for it as well. But within the city attorney's office, 12 years ago, they were handling about 7,000 cases of domestic violence a year. It was a very big priority under Casey Gwynn. He founded something called the Family Justice Center, which created a one-stop shop for victims of domestic violence. Today, they are handling about 2,500 cases of domestic violence. And I wish I could say it's because domestic violence has gone down, but it's really about the priority of that issue.
Is it a lack of resources or just...
It's a lack of priority and a lack of resources, and those go hand in hand, right? It's how they've done it. About after Casey Gwynn left, you saw the Family Justice Center, which was housed and operated really outside of the city attorney's budget, inside the city attorney's budget, sort of fall by the wayside. And because of all the budgetary cuts that happened over the next 12 years, they just never really got their footing again.
Now, as far I think they didn't they have a innovate a domestic violence court as well? Did that happen under Casey Gwynn?
Correct. Too? Yeah. So they had the domestic violence court. They had the Family Justice Center. I mean, he did a lot of innovative steps, and really, San Diego was the model for how you deal with domestic violence across the country. And he has since gone on to share that model and put it in place in other counties and other jurisdictions across the country.
And I guess we should just flow right into the drug court and drug issues. And I guess does the city get involved in drug offenses too? Or
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So we it's at the misdemeanor level. So it's the entry level type things. And that's where these drug courts, the homeless courts, the domestic violence courts, the veterans courts, that's where you can make a big difference because you can really folks that have perhaps enter the criminal justice system for the first time, you can divert them away from it with the use of these courts where they have alternative sentencing.
Yeah. So that I guess that's worked out to be successful in a lot of jurisdictions as well. So
it can be, and it's something that the city attorney's office is currently just now starting to roll out in a more aggressive fashion, and we would push that harder. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to get into some human trafficking issue, and I guess we'll talk about the department in general as well. So I'll be back with Gil Cabrera running for city attorney right after these words. Hang on.
That's awesome.
Oh, my. How dramatic.
That's south of L.A. law.
Yeah, south of L.A. law. But anyway, we're back with Gil Cabrera, running for city attorney. Good job, Justin. He got that quickly, didn't he? I want to get into the human trafficking issue. I know it's coming to light now with at the county level with Diane Jacob and some of the great work people like J.W. August are doing. And, you know, it's a problem here, isn't it? I mean, we're hearing of cases now where gals are jogging by Point Loma Nazarene and Jeeps are guys jumping out of a van and trying to grab people. I mean, it's getting crazy.
But Joe, it goes well beyond that. It's a very coherent and organized business.
Well,
absolutely, it's an organized business. It is huge in San Diego, in part because we're a border town as well. But it's also close to the airport, close to Mexico. But they're also recruiting from within the city and you know people that are at risk. One of the things that ties into the city attorney's office is the domestic violence piece that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of these victims of human that get moved into human trafficking are people that are fleeing domestic violence situations, children that are fleeing domestic violence mm-hmm. situations. And so they tie in directly.
Mm.
The other thing is that Point Loma Nazarene did a study last year where they analyzed all these domestic violence cases, and they found that there was a lot of indications of human trafficking within those cases, but the police and the prosecutors weren't trained to sort of spot that yet. And so they were missing a lot of potential human trafficking matters as well.
Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty big staff, what, 145 attorneys and 200 staff, you said, right?
Yep.
And 46 million.
How big is the dollar budget again?
$46 million.
Okay. $46 million. Are you going to, I guess, increase the vigilance or enact some policies to help address this human trafficking thing better than what's been going on in the past? Or?
Absolutely. So I was a founding member of the Lawyers Club of San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force, and so we've been looking at different strategies to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The region's doing a pretty good job of coordinating amongst all the law enforcement agencies, but within mm-hmm. the city attorney's office, it's something that we haven't really focused on over the years, and it's something that we need to start training our prosecutors to start looking for so that we can start moving in the right direction.
How do we get some of these fat cats who are running this thing, and how do we bust up the organization and get some of these make examples out of some people?
Well, a lot of when you're building up these criminal cases, you want to start at the low level folks and get them to roll on so the higher level folks, and you start moving those up the ranks. And this is where the city attorney's office can actually be useful, right? We come in on these domestic violence calls, on these other low level crime calls, and you maybe pick up some of these low level folks that if you're acting in a coordinated fashion or among the region, you can actually sort of start rolling up these cases and do what you can.
We need more vigilance by, they always say if you see something, say something. I mean, we need to maybe get a tip line or something on this stuff, too, going.
There's a regional tip line on that as of right now. But, again, it's a matter of bringing the right resources to it. A big thing we've been talking about is for a long time, the city attorney's office had some of the best training for its prosecutors, really in the county and the state.
Mm-hmm.
That went by the wayside, again, sort of 12 years ago or so. And what we want to do is bring back this robust training program that they used to have, where it was a 6-week robust training program. You shadowed seasoned prosecutors, and you were able to sort of learn how to do your job better.
Mm. Yeah, and one of the challenges is nobody wants to talk about it in public. It doesn't really fit with the America's Finest City motto.
But it's critically important that we do.
Oh, it's absolutely critically important that it needs to be brought to light.
Yep. And that's one of the roles, that's one of the important roles of the city attorney. You're one of two citywide elected officials, and so you do have a voice, and you should be using it for important issues like this mm-hmm. to bring it to light.
Absolutely. How about for seniors? I know one of our great sponsors heads up the SeniorSafeAndSound.org initiative here to help prevent financial elder abuse. Do you feel that we can do a better job in that area as well?
Absolutely. And one of the planks on my platform has been talking about the Consumer and the Environmental Protection Unit. This is a unit within the city attorney's office that actually is charged with protecting consumers, elder abuse, all consumers of all types. The issue is there are 5 attorneys out of 145 protecting all the citizens of San Diego from both consumer fraud and the environment. And so you can tell, the sort of priority that it is in that office. And the crazy thing,
consumer fraud is huge.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is this is a unit that could really pay for itself. I mean, this is if you're bringing these cases correctly, you can generate revenue for the office to sustain a enforcement unit of consumer fraud. So that's something that we're definitely going to be putting some more resources in.
And then the homeless, I know that may not come entirely under your jurisdiction, but you did discuss it at a recent public event. You had some very, very good insight on that. Do you want to share?
So much of what we deal with the homeless is a lack of resources and planning on behalf of the city and the region. And big thing that we did was we started transitioning to housing first, and we got rid of all these transitional housing units and all the shelters, but we didn't really have the money to do housing first. And so now we have a sort of increase in the homeless population, in part because of that. The other thing is the city is under two federal court settlements, class action settlements, involving our enforcement of our move-along laws and how we treat the homeless. And so the city attorney's office has a critical role in playing in how you deal with how the city enforces its laws. Ultimately, you're not going to fine or jail your way out of homelessness. You need to have resources brought to bear so you can help these folks get over the drug addiction, some of the mental health issues, and that's how you're going to solve
it. I mean, I see some of these people on the streets, and you know, they're screaming at the light posts, and I just don't know what you do with some of these people. It's sad.
There are definitely resources out there we're not taking full advantage of. At the county level, there's a lot of medical and psychological resources we're not really fully utilizing. And then there's the most heartbreaking one is with veterans.
Yeah.
We have left, you know, tens of millions of dollars on the table on how we can help veterans, particularly homeless veterans. And that's just inexcusable, right? That's just federal and state money that we're just ignoring.
I think when we had some of that stimulus money from came to the county, they ignored it because they didn't want the strings attached to it or something or other. But the sad thing is now the mayor just put these he spent $57,000 putting stones under this bridge where the homeless were sleeping, and I know the All-Star game is coming, and maybe he wants to beautify the city, and I see a lot of paving going on.
Well, if he wants to do that, get rid of the Padre. Yeah.
But my point is he just scattered those homeless people all over the place.
Didn't fix the problem, that's for sure.
I saw them scatter in the Sherman Heights and going north, and you know, it's sad.
All we've been doing is moving them from place to place and not really solving the problem. We're addressing some of the aspects of what happens because of the homeless population, but we don't really deal with them. And then when we deal with them, goodness, we're not treating them with dignity. At all. I mean, to put jagged rocks so they can't lay down on the sidewalk is just,
I mean, they're
cruel.
Just going to move someplace urinate in somebody's backyard rather. Yeah. But the point being now, so the city attorney, you get this, you have this dynamic going on, whether you react to issues or you can get proactive. And I guess there is a balance there, right? I mean, you can
absolutely. You're not. I mean, you really shouldn't. Aside from on the law enforcement, on the prosecutorial side, you really shouldn't be a policymaker, right? You're the lawyer for the city, but that doesn't mean we can't be proactive about how we deal with things, right? And so the homeless population is an issue that we can be proactive about. We have a federal court jurisdiction under our policies, and we could bring ideas to the federal court and to the plaintiff's lawyers in that case on how we want to start solving the problem and bring them through that process instead. So you can be proactive about these types of issues and really give advice. I mean, again, the homeless thing is a good example because if I was the city attorney and they told me, here, we're going to cut funding here and then we're going to move to this other model, but we don't have any plan or any good plan for how we transition to the new model, I would have been talking from a law enforcement, from a risk management standpoint. I says, you're going to have an increase in the homeless population and you're not going to have any resources to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important. That's what a good lawyer gives their client a heads up about the problems that are coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what you do is risk mitigation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But speaking of problems, all right, I can't let you get out of here without talking about a stadium.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing we're talking about?
The stadium.
Now, and I know, you're all for increasing convention and convention business and hotel business. I mean, it's a big part of our economy, the tourism industry. However, I'm not totally thrilled with having a new stadium downtown. I do think that maybe a sports arena downtown might make more sense. But and of course, the money and the financing and how much the city might be on the hook for. But all right, so what's your take on all this mess that's been flying around?
So I've been careful on taking a formal position on either initiative, and the reason for that is that I may be the lawyer that's dealing with one or both if they pass. And, and I can assure you that if one or both pass, we're going to be in litigation and we're going to be dealing with lawsuits. However, the job of the city attorney is going to be to protect the taxpayers. And both of these initiatives have a lot of vague language in them about where the money comes from, what the money is going to. I think the Chargers initiative is probably a bit more vague in terms of how much city money actually goes into a stadium. But we're going to be there to protect the taxpayers at the end of the day. Because, look, if you look at the studies that they did in The Atlantic about a year ago, they did an article. There isn't, and they looked at every stadium deal over the last 30 years, and there isn't one where a city made out okay.
Yeah.
You know, we just have a history in the public sector of doing a horrible job.
The numbers don't lie.
No, exactly.
And the public's finally waking up.
Yeah. And, you know, if the public decides they want to spend money on a stadium, Mm-hmm. As long as they know that's what's going to happen, cool. But don't sell it to us mm-hmm. as an economic boon for the city, because we mm-hmm. usually lose money on these types of
yeah.
things.
But I think we have to wrap it right there, Gil Cabrera.
Gil, really appreciate it. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks for having
good
me
luck with the election. We'll be right back. We're going to talk with Barbara Bree next, so come on back after these words.